Good morning. May it please the Court, David Anthony from law firm Berger Harris on behalf of the appellant Far Marketing Services. With me this morning, I'd like to introduce Robert Brown, the president of Spar Marketing Services, and to his left is Peter Brown, vice president of Spar Marketing Services. Also with me today is Thomas Volbrecht of the state of Minnesota. Mr. Volbrecht has been admitted pro hoc vice and will be presenting argument on the appellant's behalf.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the Court and Counsel, I am Thomas Volbrecht, and I thank you for the privilege of appearing in front of you this morning to argue on behalf of my client, Spar Marketing Services. The basic issue this morning is whether the appellee board appropriately applied the law and weighed the evidence in determining that my client failed to meet the ABC test for independent contracting under Delaware law. Initially, the board found that my client failed to meet all three of the ABC elements. We appealed to the Superior Court. The board did not appear there. The Superior Court found that we failed to meet A, did not move on to look at B and C. We then appealed to this court. The board, again, at least initially, did not respond or defend at this court's invitation. The board then did file a brief. At that point, the board acknowledged that, in fact, my client met the A standard, but then went on to say that we failed to meet B and C. Now, the standard of review that you face is...
The claimant did not appear and take a position. Is that correct?
The only thing that we have from the claimant in the record is an initial affidavit put in by her during the investigation of her claim, and really the only substantive thing she said in there was that she performed services in retail stores and she performed services at her home.
Is there some consequence that we're... some inference we're supposed to draw from that, or is that just a neutral fact?
I would say it's really pretty much a neutral fact. We acknowledge that we still have the burden of establishing all three elements. We believe that we did so. To the extent that the board tries to argue a negative, that there isn't evidence on something, so long as we met our burden of production, the fact that she didn't show up to provide any contrary testimony, I think, is something that should have been looked at all levels.
But it
is not by itself.
So you're saying we should focus on the merits, and at the board level, the merits are before us on A, B, and C exceptions.
Correct.
But at the Superior Court level, only A exception.
It actually, all three were presented to the Superior Court. The Superior Court reached A and then not inappropriately said, I don't have to look at B and C because we have to meet all three. And then when it gets to this court, A is the only thing that is perhaps properly teed up, if that would be the term. However, when the board does appear, the board then acknowledges that, in fact, we did meet A. So the only element that the Superior Court looked at.
Is it more appropriate then for us to remand this for the Superior Court to consider B and C?
I do not believe so, because all the evidence was provided as required, and we believe that if you look at the evidence, the only evidence on B and C, frankly, is supportive of our establishment, and we do not believe it's appropriate to go back and give the board a second bite at the apple, or frankly, to give us a second bite at the apple.
All right.
There's nothing for us to review in terms of a Superior Court decision, is there, on B and C?
Not on B and C, no. But you have the right and the ability to look at those issues independently in any event. And we, in fact, initially briefed B and C.
All right. Well, in terms of the standard of review, mm-hmm. is it accurate to say that there's no real dispute of fact here, that we're dealing solely with questions of law as to A, B, and C?
I believe that is correct. And I'd like to briefly touch all three tests, even though the board has acknowledged A. I recognize that the court still has the opportunity to look at that independently. And we believe that clearly we met the A standard, which the board has now acknowledged. The individuals that we contract with have complete freedom over whether, when, how, and by whom services will ever be performed for our company. There's no payment of expenses. There's no training. There are no meetings. There's no supervision. No work is performed at any location. It is owned, operated, supervised, or controlled in any way by my client. That clearly meets the substantial evidence test. And on the other side of the equation, coming from the board, there was no evidence. Again, the only evidence presented, if you look at the transcript of the administrative hearing, again, is the affidavit where the claimant acknowledged that she performed services in her home and at the stores. And then there was one paragraph of oral testimony by a representative from the board, and I do not believe it was even the auditor that did the investigation. So we believe if you look under the substantial evidence test, clearly we met it, and there is no evidence going the other way under A. So I believe, frankly, that the board appropriately conceded on that point. If you move to B, which is such services performed either outside the usual course of the business for which the service is performed or is performed outside all the places of business of the enterprise for which the services is performed. Again, as was noted, this was not reached by the Superior Court. And if you look at the decision below by the board and also the board's argument, their position is that this case is governed by the medical placement case, which was a case where this court held that notwithstanding the disjunctive of either if it's in the same, it's either outside the course of business of the entity, in this case my client, or it's outside the places of business where that entity operates, in this case my client. Now the evidence.
Well, do you concede mm-hmm. the second part of that disjunctive under the enterprise theory? Because didn't the board find that the merchandiser services are not performed outside the places of S&S's enterprise?
That and that is that I believe is the issue here. We agree or we do not dispute that it's that it could be argued that it's within the course of business. We dispute the enterprise argument that they make based on medical placement. The medical placement case is very limited in its facts, and I believe, and we argue here, has to be very limited in its application under the statute. Under the statute, the legislature set up a disjunctive. They said you're either outside of the course of business or you're outside of the places of business. You cannot, under that statutory framework, say that just because the services are within the course of business of the enterprise, that they therefore, it becomes an enterprise and all businesses, all
okay, so
all
it's a location. It's a location issue, about. Correct?
Excuse me?
It's a location issue.
It is a location
and
issue.
And so the question becomes, what is the, you know, what are the boundaries of the place of business?
Correct.
Excuse me. In a case like this where, you know, there may not be a physical location.
Well, in this case, let me compare and contrast to medical placement. In medical placement, the court found specifically that the only place of business was where the services for the technicians were performed. In that case, it was medical technicians. They'd go into private homes or perhaps hospitals and operate medical equipment there for patients. And the court found that that was the only businesses being performed. In that circumstance, I will grant the court that it was correct. The disjunctive doesn't exist there because there is no other place of business. In this case, that is not the case, and the undisputed evidence in the record is that both my client performs businesses elsewhere and, in fact, that the claimant herself performed services elsewhere. She said she performed services in her home and at the stores. So there is, you're now past this 100%. If the whole business, the enterprise is 100% at the location where the services are performed, I grant you that the disjunctive makes no sense. At that point, there is only one place. However, here, where there are services performed in various locations, you're outside of the 100%, you're back to the disjunctive. And I don't think
you're
there's any other way to read
services
the
are performed inside the place of business and some are not.
Correct.
And that's sufficient to
that's sufficient to satisfy B,
is that right?
Yes. That's sufficient to get you outside of medical placement, which says in a circumstance where there is only one place where businesses are performed, in that case you do have an enterprise circumstance where since the only business being performed is exactly what the individual is performing in that location, that is the spot where it has to be, and in that circumstance the disjunctive makes no sense. But here, where there are services performed in several different locations, we're outside of medical placement. And I think it's also appropriate to point out that the appellee relied on medical placement and the facts as being on all squares initially, also with the A prong of the test. When they gave up that argument, that was at least an implicit acknowledgement by them that the facts between our case and the medical placement case are distinguishable.
If the claimant here, you know, the putative employee or independent contractor,
yes,
performed all of her services at home, then that would be a clear-cut case one way or the other. That is, she would not be performing services in any place of business, correct?
Well, correct.
And if she performed all of her service, if she operated out of her home but performed, let's say, 75% of the work that she contracted for in the particular place of business, where does that leave you?
Well, I think the focus really is more on, frankly, my client's side of the equation on performing services. In medical placement, this court held if the entity who's contracting services, the only services are that individual, okay, they both connect.
Stop.
I'm sorry.
Let's assume that you're right, that medical placement doesn't read on this case.
Okay.
We still have the regulation to deal with, or the statute. And, is there any other authority that deals with a hybrid case like this?
Well, I guess I would first note that I don't believe it's a hybrid case, because the statute, if we agree we're outside of medical placement, the statute on its face reads, it's performed outside of the places of business of the enterprise for which the service is performed. They're performing services on behalf of Spar Marketing Services. Spar Marketing Services has no place of business in the state of Delaware. The claimant performs services in her home, which is not owned, controlled, or operated by Spar Marketing Services. She performs services in retail establishments, again, which were not owned, controlled, operated, or in any way supervised by Spar Marketing Services. That meets facially the requirements of the second prong of the B test.
And that's because Spar is basically an online contractor? Well,
Spar has the only thing we've got in the record on this is that Spar performs services in locations other than in Delaware. I believe the testimony was in locations in Michigan and New York.
So there are physical?
There are physical locations.
But not here?
Not here.
So is it your position then, let's say a big employer like Google or somebody like mm-hmm. that has full-time, concedes 100% employees, but says go home and work, because they're working at home, that they would at least satisfy the B prong, even though they're otherwise full-time employees?
Potentially they would. There may be some issues factually.
Is that your argument?
I think on the B prong, yes. But that is why there are three prongs. You have to establish freedom from direction and control. You have to provide that they aren't performing services at any location owned or operated by the company. So, yes, a Google or any employer, and this happens a lot now, I will acknowledge, that people work from home. That would meet facially the B element, but it would not meet A and it would not meet C. You've got three.
And C is what?
C is customarily engaged in an independently established trade occupation or business. And the only evidence that was presented on this was presented by my client. There was no evidence presented by the board. And I believe Well, first of all, the board in its opposition brief misinterprets the statute or misreads the statute. They try to add on a provision that the business of the claimant has to be the exact same business as SPAR. That's not in the statute, and it's not the case. And what we did provide was strong, substantial, and completely unrebutted testimony that merchandising, the type of work that the claimant did, is an independently established business in the state of Delaware. There are over 90 companies actively looking for people to do that work. There's a trade organization. There are opportunities for marketing, solicitation of business back and forth. In addition, there was no economic dependence of the claimant on my client. It's an independently established business out there that she can operate in to the extent she wants to. Now, the issue that was raised, additional issue raised by the board, was the issue of what does it mean to be customarily engaged. And their argument is that in order to be customarily engaged in that independently established business, my client, had the burden of showing that she was working not only for my company, our company, but also working for other companies at the same time. First off, that's not anywhere in the statute. The statute does not say, one, that she's exclusively engaged in this enterprise. It also does not anywhere say she has to be simultaneously working for a number of companies at the same time.
What is the fact here?
We don't know.
All we know, she could be working solely for SPAR.
She could, and that is an irrelevant fact under the statute as it's written, and as I believe can be appropriately interpreted.
You're into your rebuttal time, which you're welcome to use, but okay. When it runs down, you're out of time.
I understand. I just want to touch on this point just briefly in addition. The argument that the appellee makes with respect to some obligation that we show that the claimant or others are working for other companies at the same time they're working for us, one, is nowhere in the statute, and two, actually is in opposition to the A prong of the statute. The only way that SPAR could determine and control and monitor that an individual such as Ms. Barr was working for other companies and was working for other companies at whatever sufficient level the board seems to think is necessary would be if we, in fact, actively, constantly monitored her, if we actively, constantly monitored the amount of work she did for us and others, and if we set up quotas so that she didn't work beyond a certain amount for us as opposed to others. All the things that would get us knocked out under A, they're now saying we have to do under C. All we have to do under C is show that when she's engaged in this independent business, she is acting independently, and that was absolutely established here. There's no direction and control over her work. She's acting as an independent business.
And she's free to engage.
That's the whole thing of independent contracting. You decide how much and how often you want to do it. Thank you.
May it please the court. Good morning, Justices. Tom Ellis on behalf of the appellee.
And you... at some point, tell us why you conceded the Superior Court.
I'll be happy to, Justice Ridgely. There is, unfortunately, not as much of a factual record as we all might have liked, because the claimant didn't testify in particular. Judge Witham, with whom I respectfully disagree, concluded from certain facts that the claimant was under SPAR's control. When I read the contract, the so-called independent merchandiser's contract, it, by the way, didn't say independent contractor's contract, it said independent merchandiser's contract, but it did mention in several places the words or the term independent contractor. Most significantly, right above her signature on the last page was a phrase that said, you're not going to be eligible for unemployment insurance. SPAR has locations in Michigan It has locations in New York. I don't know what they do there. We're talking about merchandising, Your Honors, placing merchandise in a CVS or a Target store, that sort of thing. It seemed to me a bit of a stretch to suggest that from Michigan or New York, someone could be monitoring the details of Mrs. Barr's work as she...
So we're basically, as far as your side is concerned, we need be address only B and C,
yes,
neither of which was addressed by the court.
That's correct. But, Justice, I hope I've answered your question. That's where I frankly...
And is that based on the limited record, or because the contract would not override actual testimony if she explained
well,
that?
And that's a good point, Your Honor. Spar Marketing had an individual show up to testify. Her name was Heidi Savage. And her testimony was unrebutted that this individual, Mrs. Barr, was unsupervised from afar. Justices, let me just say that obviously the A, B, and C test is not so easy to apply at various stages along the way before getting before you. It would have been nice if there had been better facts.
It would be nice if there had been more law, too.
It
would be nice if there were more law, too. Is it correct that there isn't any?
Your Honor, federal rules decision 273, federal rules decision 516, recently canvassed the states. They were, trying to certify a class action.
Have you cited those cases to us?
I did not, Your Honor. I'm sorry that I didn't. My point is, the ABC test is all over the land, and it's been around for quite some time. In Delaware, we have the seminal decision that's now 30 years old by Justice O'Hara that was affirmed by the Supreme Court. And that's all we have really to go by. There's the Debbie Cavan case.
So there is at least some kind of compendium or review of whatever cases are out there in those two FRD
Yes.
sites, which we don't have.
And my apologies for that, Your Honor. Mrs. Barr performed her marketing services. I'm going to focus on the B prong here because we do disagree with SPAR with respect to whether or not they satisfied B or C. The B is that enterprise prong that Justice Ridgely, you questioned counsel about a moment ago.
Well, is your view that we should be determining B and C as an original matter, at least judicially, or should we remand to the Superior Court?
Well, I was asked to file an answering brief to assist the court, focusing on all, not just the Part A prong of this test, and so that's what I have tried to do. Your Honor, I suggested to the court that since it was SPAR's burden to prove that it qualified for the exemption under Parts B and C, they missed their opportunity. They had a witness who testified, it's for sure.
They say they have proved it. That there are undisputed facts, and that the only legal conclusion that can be drawn from those undisputed facts favors them and not you. Now you're saying we should consider the contrary argument without the benefit of any cases,
Your Honor. I hope I'm following your question. What I'm saying is, when reviewing the record that does exist, the testimony of the witnesses and the exhibits that are in the record, they have not satisfied either B or C.
Okay, well, Mr. Ellis, if this isn't a case involving an independent contractor, what is?
Pardon me?
If this isn't the case, tell me what would qualify.
Well, Your Honor, I'm not saying I'm not so sure Mrs. Barr wasn't an independent contractor, and if in fact she had performed negligently or she had done something as to which Spar could have been charged with vicarious liability, it wouldn't have gone anywhere. If all they had to do was prove that she was an independent contractor, there wouldn't be any B or C tests.
Well, I'm using that term loosely.
What I'm saying is B and C establishes that, in fact, there may be independent contractors who don't have independently established trades, professions, or businesses, or who don't work apart from SPARS, or they're doing something else,
well,
who
would
still be entitled to unemployment insurance, and
well,
there's a reason for that.
Under the interpretation that your side appears to be arguing, there's no business, however structured, no independent contractor business that would not be captured by this statute. Isn't that correct?
Oh, no, no. I think, Your Honor, Justice Jacobs, I disagree with counsel. There's a
okay,
symmetry.
Well, then if there are arrangements like the one that's involved here that would not be captured, give us some examples.
Well, if I was to try to prove, I would have started, Mrs. Barr, remember, they have applications. This isn't something where they just go on the Internet and they apply. There's an interview process. You heard that. It's in the testimony. There's an application, and then there's an interview. And during that process, they asked for her W-9. She gave it. They might have said, hey, would you also give us produce the 1099? By the way, Mrs. Barr, will you also give us your tax records of your business? Who are your clients? There's an aspect of this three-part test that says we want to know that this really is an established business. So what I was trying to say to you a moment ago...
Well, let me interrupt you. You seem to be suggesting that if the claimant had three other clients, or whatever you'd like to call them,
yes,
that were part of the business, then that would be fine. But if Spar was the only relationship the claimant had in terms of doing business, then that somehow negates being an independent contractor?
That's right.
Why?
Your Honor, let me just say, we're talking about the independence test. The cases across the land, contrary to what counsel is suggesting, and in particular what a New Jersey court just said about 3 weeks ago in a case that Spar is litigating, the independence test has a double requirement. The worker has a proprietary interest in an independently established trade or profession, and she, in this case, is customarily engaged in that. Okay? So what I'm saying is there's a symmetry. We charge the Division of Unemployment Insurance and the Department of Labor charges employers whose workers are able to qualify for benefits. It pays no benefits to those that are self-employed. So if, in fact, Mrs. Barr had an independently established trade or business as to which she was customarily engaged, by the way, there's no testimony about that at all. There's a testimony that she was free to engage in that. There's no testimony that she actually did such things. Now,
wait a second. I may be missing the whole thing here, but it seems to me that you're saying if somebody is starting out their own independent business, then until they have more than one company that they're doing business with, they can't be an independent contractor. Is that what you're saying?
Your Honor, yeah. What I'm saying is there's a line of cases in Delaware that says if someone is not able and available to go to work immediately for a medical reason or whatever, they're not entitled to unemployment insurance. They're also not able and available if they're engaging in a startup. If they're a lawyer trying to start a private practice, or if They're devoting full time to that startup. They're not available. But what I'm, and what I'm saying to you is C says, Mrs. Barr, if you have third-party customers, I, Spar, I want to know about that because I really can't treat you as an I'm going to have to treat you as an employee. I'm going to have to pay for you unless I'm able to show that you actually have a stream of business that you can rely upon if all of a sudden we're unable to give you any work. Can I give you just one site? It's that New Jersey case just decided.
In your brief?
Right, it was after the brief. It was decided 3 weeks ago.
Well, does the other side know you're going to tell us this case?
I'm not sure that they do, but they were.
I honestly don't know the case you're talking about.
213 Westlaw 890071, Spar Marketing Service versus New Jersey Department of Labor and Workforce, decided March 12, 2013.
Well, before
before
the New Jersey case was decided, you know, was there any authority to support the position that you're now arguing for? That is, no startups.
Your Honor.
You know, no startups. There must be affirmative evidence that this claimant has other clients and the like. Was there any authority to support that? Either in a rule or in a case?
Your Honor, the authorities that I've cited, I believe, stand for that proposition, and in particular, the medical placement services. My understanding is that the ABC test is designed to cast a broader net. It's
I understand that.
It's designed to pay benefits.
We've been talking about C. So far?
Yes, sir.
Let's pause it on that and tell us about B. What is that all about, and what is the law in terms of the requirement?
Justice Jacobs, there are a lot of states that don't have a test B. For example, Pennsylvania has no test B. They have an A and C. All I can tell you about B is it seems to, focus this test on whether or not the individual whose status is at issue really is an entrepreneur on their own. The B test, as I understand it, I've tried to wrestle with it too. I thought what Justice Judge O'Hara was saying was that the CVS or the Target would be treated as if it was Spar's premises, Spar's location for purposes of prong B, because Spar, like medical placement services, has no Delaware location to perform marketing or merchandising services.
Okay, but that's an interpretation.
Yes, it is.
Not of this statute, is it? Is that an interpretation of B, Judge O'Hara's opinion?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Is there any other case that you're relying on besides that?
That I'm relying on? Absolutely not.
Okay.
B seems to go hand in hand with.
Okay, under your side's interpretation, unless this claimant is working entirely in her home and doesn't set foot in any of the places, the Targets or Costco's where merchandise is being placed, then she doesn't satisfy B.
100% of her work? I'm not sure about that, Your Honor.
Well, is that an answer to my question?
Services performed either outside the usual course.
If she spends 1% of her time in Target and 1% of her time in Acme and, you know, take your pick, but in the aggregate, 75% of her time in her home, is that?
Well,
To be or not to be?
There's no testimony about how she spent her time. You could not do merchandising services at your home. What she testified to, Justice, was she...
No, I'm asking you about the law.
I thought I was telling you about the facts and the law.
Let's abstract it from this case. You know, any claimant who spends the, you know, undisputed majority of her available work time at home.
Okay.
But spends some time on site.
Your Honor, I completely agree with you, and I think the cases suggest you have to engage in an individual fact-finding. It's not enough to show, as Spahr did, what merchandisers might typically do. What they had to show was what Mrs. Barr did. They didn't. It was their burden.
I'm sorry. What is it? You're saying, you're arguing that based on a negative? I'm just asking you what the positive rule of law is.
Well, Your Honor,
I mean, what you're saying
doing
is
the best
they, didn't show us. You're saying they didn't show what the facts were.
There.
But that, you know, whatever they did or didn't do, there has to be some. Excuse me. Whatever they did or didn't show, there has to be some standard against which their showing or failure to meet it has to be juxtaposed. And I'm just asking you about the standard. Under B.
Your Honor, I don't know what the answer to that question is.
You don't know what the law is?
Your Honor, I thought the law was medical placement services.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I want to ask you about B. The other side says that we should focus on the disjunctive or.
Yes, sir.
In B, and that even if the enterprise, as I understand it, even if the enterprise approach is taken to the second prong of that, under the first prong, they've satisfied that. Why haven't they?
Well, Justice Ridgely, my understanding is that the disjunctive or apply to whether or not the service was performed outside the usual course of the business, which would have been marketing. We make no argument with respect to that. Is performed outside all of the places of business of the enterprise for which service is performed. We take the position that Judge O'Hara was right when he said, if the enterprise is supplying medical technicians to private homes or medical facilities, by definition, meant that those were not qualifying locations. They should be treated as if they were medical placement services place of business.
I understand that. That's as to the second part of, on the right side of the or. On the left side of the or, the other side's saying they've satisfied that. Now, why haven't they satisfied that?
Well, again, my feeling, my position is that they didn't satisfy it. My position is there was no discussion about that at all. Our position is simply that they didn't show that she was doing her work at any other place than Spahr's clients' locations.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So. Briefly in response, with respect to the B prong, counsel seemed to indicate that it's his understanding of the medical placement test that the court was looking at whether, in fact, the entity involved had another place of business in Delaware. And the mere fact that they didn't have a place of business in Delaware was enough to get you under the medical placement test. That isn't what the court said. The court said no other place of business at all. The only business is the services being provided by the medical technicians in those places where they're providing it. That's not the undisputed evidence here, and it's right in the record, is that the claimant herself did things in her home. That's in her affidavit. If there was something in addition or a way to distinguish that, the board was free to bring her in to explain that that doesn't have any application here. They didn't. It has application, and we provided evidence that we do.
The burden is on your client. Right?
Absolutely. And what we had to show was that we're outside of medical placement, which is that services are provided in places other than the retail store. And we provided that on both ends of the equation. We provide services elsewhere, and she herself admitted she provided services elsewhere. Medical placement itself is an exception to the rule, because medical placement says, I recognize the disjunctive.
So it's in her affidavit that other than the SPARS location where the
She worked
at other locations.
Well, all she says, and there's no explanation of it, is that she worked in retail, I think it's retail stores and her home. That's it. It's about five words. But that's enough.
Well, how does that help us?
That helps you because she's working in places other than the stores. She's working in, which is the one crucial factor that the court looked at in medical placement. The court in medical placement said there's only the one place where any business is performed. Here we establish it's going in both directions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take this matter under advisement and take a brief recess.